You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. It's Friday, and that means it's time for our reporter roundtable. It's when we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines this past week. Today, our panel includes Heath Druzan with Boise State Public Radio News and producer of the Extremely American podcast, Betsy Russell, the Boise Bureau Chief at the Idaho Press and the voice of the Eye on Boise blog, and Margaret Carmel, senior reporter with BoiseDev.com. Happy Friday. Welcome back. And how is everyone today?
Doing well.
Pretty
thank
good,
you.
Sam.
Good, fine.
Heath, let's take a minute to talk about what happened in Coeur d'Alene over the past week. Give us a rundown of what happened Saturday. And Betsy, please chime in as we go. Heath, what happened?
Yeah, I mean a pretty shocking event for a lot of people, I think, and some dark echoes of North Idaho's past. Coeur d'Alene police intercepted a U-Haul moving truck and ended up arresting 31 members of the white supremacist group Patriot Front, who were piled in there allegedly with riot gear like shin guards and shields, and at least one smoke grenade. And what police say is they also had was a 7-page blueprint basically to start a riot at a gay pride event in Coeur d'Alene. So they were all arrested on misdemeanor charges of conspiracy to start a riot. And what the Coeur d'Alene police said they averted was a potential violent incident at this gay pride parade. this being 2022, it basically ended up spiraling into a number of conspiracy theories on the far right, to the point where the police had to push back on these ideas that this was all a so-called false flag event that the federal government had perpetrated and basically orchestrated to make the right look bad. The police said there's absolutely no evidence of that. And to be clear, nobody has presented evidence of that. But, you know, it's 2022. These conspiracy theories tend to rocket from the fringes to the mainstream really quickly. And we had some pretty high profile Idaho political figures, including the vice president of the Idaho Freedom Foundation, promoting that baseless theory. So, you know, obviously North Idaho has had some real problems with bigotry. The area nations set up shop there for years and years and years. And Patriot Front, make no mistake, they're a white supremacist group. Their stated goal is to create a white ethno state in America. And they tend to show up and try to cause chaos all over the country. And their signature is piling out of a U-Haul and marching through the streets. So this certainly aligns with their sort of MO. And I think a lot of people up there were pretty alarmed and saddened to see that, but also happy to see that any violence was averted.
So give us a little more on the Patriot Front. You kind of gave us a nugget there of who they are. I mean, a lot of folks haven't heard of the Patriot Front before.
Right. This might be a new group to a lot of listeners who don't go down these sort of bizarre rabbit holes that I go down. So Patriot Front, they basically splintered off a neo-Nazi group back in 2017. And the leader there, he cut his teeth in the 2017 Charlottesville protest called Unite the Right. And that was this protest where a bunch of overtly racist groups, as well as some militias, came out to basically ostensibly defend Confederate statues. So Patriot Front, they grew out of that. They splintered off this kind of neo-Nazi group that was at Charlottesville. And they've got a really young founder, Thomas Rousseau, who out of that chaos, and if you'll remember, Charlottesville ended up with a neo-Nazi actually running over and killing a left-wing protester. Out of that came Patriot Front. And what they've basically done is said, you know, we want to create a white ethno state. They've kind of made up this canard of white people being under siege in America. And they've showed up at a number of high profile, high tension events around the country and kind of piled out in these uniforms and marched through the streets in shows of force. Now, they haven't done very well. They've either been stopped by police or stopped by left-wing protesters and sort of intimidated into running away multiple times. But that shouldn't take away from the fact that this group, you know, potentially does pose a threat. They have some pretty overtly racist beliefs, some extreme views, and certainly according to Coeur d'Alene police, these are all allegations at this point, but according to Coeur d'Alene police, they were bent on causing violence. So we'll never know, you know, what might have happened if they hadn't have been intercepted. But I think this has a lot of people concerned, and certainly people in the LGBTQ plus community up in North Idaho, you know, this seemed like a threat to them. Although important to note, they went ahead with the Pride event that was allegedly targeted by these guys, and that went on without a hitch. And I think that was a real victory for them from talking to folks up there.
Do we know anything more about the information that was taken along with the folks who were arrested? That was a blueprint for whatever they were going to do.
Kay Thornburg, who wrote an article about what the court records on this show, and it ran on the front page of the Idaho Press today. There were some interesting nuggets about this plan, and it sounds like they had abnormally long flagpoles and shields, and they intended to march in a column into the park where the Pride in the Park festival was taking place. And after they had caused, I forget the wording, but it was something like an acceptable level of conflict, they would then regroup and march down Sherman Avenue, which is the main street of Coeur d'Alene. This all brings back really ugly memories for North Idaho in particular, and for the state as a whole, of the Aryan Nations activity in our state, which the state very, very strongly stood up to from our state leadership on down, and really succeeded in marginalizing completely until the point that they were kicked out of Idaho through a lawsuit. I think one question on a lot of people's minds is whether we will see the same kind of reaction to this activity that's now come up again, hate groups coming to Idaho, an activity in our state.
Well, and go ahead, Heath.
Well, just to jump in on that, I think that's a really important point about the reaction. And I will say the early returns are kind of mixed there. You know, a lot of there's political figures in the state who reacted to this by basically saying this was a fake staged event. You know, there wasn't widespread condemnation. There was some condemnation and the governor came out and condemned it. But you had others who were basically, they're not making excuses for Patriot Front, but basically saying that they weren't really Patriot Front, which, again, there's no evidence for. So I think that's sort of a stark contrast to, you know, what happened in the 80s and 90s when there was pretty universal condemnation of groups like the Aryan Nations.
And let's continue with the reaction. The Coeur d'Alene police have been getting threats, and I think I saw this on the Idaho Press, Betsy, including doxing and other threats?
Yes, the Coeur d'Alene police chief announced at a press conference, and all the media up there covered that, including the Coeur d'Alene Press, the Spokesman Review, and the TV stations up there, that they had been getting many, many, many calls from all around the world, and that they were evenly divided between those praising them for arresting these guys before anything terrible happened, and those threatening them for having done exactly that, threatening them harm, threatening their lives. The police chief said one call came from as far away as Norway.
Wow. Okay. You know, Heath, you mentioned that you go down these rabbit holes, and certainly you have done that for your Extremely American podcast, which looks at extreme groups in America. Can we talk about the social media aspect and some of those things? I mean, you mentioned conspiracy theories. When I went on social media ahead of today to look around to see what was going on, it was a real mix of things. What are you seeing and what are you worried about?
Well, what's interesting about this event is that this has just been rocketing around social media, but I think a lot of folks might not see a lot of it because it has been just blowing up on alternative sites that a lot of extreme far-right groups and overtly racist groups use, like Telegram. And to be honest, you know, if the police had been looking at Telegram ahead of time, they might not have been as surprised. This Pride in the Park event was just kind of lighting up message boards all over the place and all over the country, even before this happened. And you had some real prominent racist figures like Nick Fuentes. And Nick Fuentes, people might know of from the America First PAC, which is a sort of alt-right alternative to the conservative the CPAC conference that happens every year. So this whole event has been blowing up on far right circles, and basically it breaks down to two things. Either they're praising Patriot Front and they're saying, yeah, these guys were doing the right thing, and there's a ton of things that I won't repeat that are just, you know, real hateful, homophobic, transphobic ideas. Or they're saying that this whole thing was staged. It kind of breaks down along those two lines. But I think a lot of people would be shocked to see how much people are talking about, you know, what is really just one of thousands of local Pride events across the country. But people zeroed in on this. It really went viral. And I don't think it's an accident that that happened before this national group, Patriot Front, which, you know, apparently only had two Idaho members in the 31, that people came from across the country to pile into that U-Haul for this Pride event.
Heath, you mentioned 31 folks who were arrested. I saw somewhere online that two other people were arrested as well. Is that true? Have we heard anything about that? Should that be something we're concerned about?
You know, if Betsy has more information, she should totally jump in. I saw that. I'll be honest, I'm a little unclear about the connections there with the other two arrests and exactly how that ties in. So I don't want to speculate too much.
And I am as well. But my impression from the reporting up there was that those were two unrelated arrests in the park of people for conduct in the park that did not directly relate to what the Patriot Front was doing.
Okay, so not connected, as far as we know.
Uh-huh.
Gotcha. And when we're also talking about to reaction and Pride events, Betsy, I saw as well in the Idaho Press about the Pride flags in Boise disappearing along Harrison Boulevard and other spots. Not a good sign.
No, and this was the second year in a row that this happened. The neighborhood association raises money and puts up these flags to mark Pride Month. And immediately a number of them were stolen and vandalized. And the community came out and immediately donated funds to replace them. And there was kind of a show of solidarity with the LGBTQ community, with people saying, no, that's not what we do here. This is a mark of tolerance and community and unity. And that's not what we want to see in our city or in our neighborhood. So that was the second year in a row that we saw that kind of incident.
Heath, as someone who has been looking at extremist groups for a few years now, what is your overall impression of what happened on Saturday and what it means in Idaho?
Yeah, I mean, so in the podcast, Extremely American, we actually looked at North Idaho, and there are some connections there. You know, what we're seeing happening is, okay, Patriot Front. It seems like they kind of parachuted in. But you are seeing some pretty hardcore racist characters starting to set up shop again in North Idaho. You've got this guy, Dave Riley. He has made some really just openly anti-Semitic statements. He has decried women getting the vote. And he ran for school board not too long ago and he lost, but he got quite a few votes. And he has support from some mainstream GOP figures. He got support from members of the Kootenai County GOP. You've also got this guy, Vincent James, who he's an out-and-out white supremacist. He set up shop in North Idaho not too long ago. Now, he doesn't have quite the same connections, but, you know, he was in a picture with Janice McGeehan. He seems to be connected to Dave Riley. There's just all these connections that are starting to be made again. And I think it's a little alarming given the places, given North Idaho's past, especially because you do see these guys making some inroads with mainstream politics, which is something that, you know, the Aryan Nations was not able to do. And I think, you know, a lot of people were relieved that they didn't. So that's the more alarming part of this, that you're starting to see a blurring of the lines between mainstream politics and some of these hate groups.
Betsy, Heath mentioned that there might have been some telegraphing on Telegram of this event. You're working on a story for Sunday about state response to this sort of thing. Can you give us a little preview?
I am, and I have to say I've never been on Telegram, so I can't address that.
I can't either. I don't know. It's new to me.
But yes, what I'm looking at is the history of Idaho's state leadership and government response to the Aryan Nations back during the time when they were active, and what kind of lessons or precedents that provides for what might or what has or has not happened today. There were four Idaho governors from two different political parties, and those were Governors Evans, Andrus, Batt, and Kempthorne, who took extremely strong out front stances against hate group activity in Idaho and the Aryan Nations during the years when they were active here, to the point of making them very prominent issues marking their tenure as governors, making proposals about them and talking about them in their state of the state messages, signing into law far-reaching and significant legislation, going to North Idaho and speaking at human rights events, many of which were occurring at the same time that the Aryan Nations were marching down Sherman Avenue or holding their World Congress out at their compound. With the last of those, Governor Kempthorne, after the Aryan Nations was basically removed from Idaho, lost its compound in a lawsuit, Governor Kempthorne proposed and got through a campaign to try to repair Idaho's image and remove the stain of being associated with hate groups. Back then, Idaho seemed to be known for nothing more than potatoes and Nazis. And the idea was to change that. And in many ways, Idaho, it was successful. Idaho became known for many other things. But now we're at a different place. And the question is, what will happen with today's leadership?
Exactly. And what will happen next? Heath, what's the next step?
Oh, boy. What will happen next?
Well, specifically for the 31 folks who were arrested.
Okay. That I can answer.
Good.
They'll be arraigned. I mean, they all face misdemeanor charges. So let's be clear. It's not like these guys are facing long prison sentences. They're all facing misdemeanor charges and they're awaiting arraignment. So they're very early in this legal process, which could take quite a long time. So right now we'll see what happens. That's all to be determined. I think the other longer term question is, you know, will this continue or was this just a blip? I think a lot of people up there are hoping it's just a blip.
Wow. Okay. So Heath, I want to thank you for giving us an update on the situation. I know you have to go. That's Heath Druzin, reporter with Boise State Public Radio and the producer of the Extremely American podcast. You can find that on our website, boisestatepublicradio.org. Heath, thanks again.
Thanks, Sam.
Betsy, you had a story this week about the debate over guns in the Idaho State House, and you write it came out of a Capitol security briefing. What was going on there?
So the Legislative Council is a group of legislative leaders that meets periodically when the legislature is not in session to handle administrative business. And one of the things that came up during their most recent meeting was that they had a Capitol security briefing. And during the course of that, one of the council's members, Senator Melissa Wintrow of Boise, brought up the issue of guns in the State House and said that she believes this issue needs to be addressed again because she's hearing from constituents that they feel unsafe coming to testify to a committee or contact their legislators because there are so many people walking around with guns in our state capitol. Now, more than half of states do not allow guns in their state capitol. As of February of 21, there was an AP survey that showed that 21 states do allow them. Eight of those only allowed concealed guns, two allowed only open carry, but Idaho allows either. And Senator Chuck Winder, the president pro tem of the Idaho State Senate, who is the co-chair of the Legislative Council, said that he does acknowledge that there were security issues in the Idaho legislature in 2020 and 2021. But he says they have now tripled the Idaho State Police presence there and vastly improved security. And there were no incidents during the 2022 legislative session. So he believes everybody should feel comfortable now and there's no need for any change. I also spoke with Representative Judy Boyle, who has often been a lead sponsor of gun rights legislation. And she also said she sees no need for any change in allowing people to bring whatever guns they want into the state capitol and carry them around openly or concealed. And that she thinks that gun-free zones are more dangerous because in such areas, only criminals have guns and then everyone but them are potential victims. So Senator Winder told me, does it deserve to have a discussion? It probably deserves a discussion. Will it go anywhere? Based on our current legislature, I don't think you'll see any changes. And that was his prediction.
Wow. And I know there was some in the article you wrote about the gallery above both the House and Senate floors, which is on a second floor, if you've never been up there, where folks can come in and sit and watch the proceedings. And you know, some concerns about that. Betsy, you and I can both remember... I'm thinking back to the incident with Jim Risch when he was in the Idaho legislature and a protester went over to the edge of the gallery and dropped something down on him from the upper gallery.
Well, that was confetti. There were no guns involved in that one.
No, but
Jim Risch did personally make a citizen's arrest, as I recall.
But it did kind of show how scary, you know, I mean, that is very open. It's an open space and... you know, there aren't any metal detectors in the state house.
That's right. Idaho doesn't have anything like that. And I did speak with the House Minority Leader, Ilana Rubel, and she said she has noticed that, quote, whenever there's a gun bill, we always have armed people staring us down from the gallery, and it's a little disconcerting. She mentioned that we know that some of these people snap. We had our mall shooter here in Boise. That was someone who frequents the state house. And she said, you know, that could have happened there. There has been discussion over the years as to whether they needed to put in plexiglass shields or something like that up in the galleries. And they've decided not to preserve the open and historic character of them. And there are many things that are restricted going into the galleries of the House and Senate. People can't wear T-shirts with slogans. You know, there are rules about hats. But there are not rules about guns.
Well, and having been up there, I can tell you, I mean, there's not really a railing either. I'm more afraid I'm going to fall off than anything else.
It's not necessarily the current building code.
No. Margaret, hi.
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Can we talk about Micron, computer chips, federal money, and a Boise expansion? What's going on there?
There's a lot swirling around about the potential of a Micron expansion here in Boise to build a fab. You know, we have reported over at Boise Dev pretty extensively about some of the rumors that it seems to be that an expansion is very likely on the table, but it's contingent on the federal government passing what's called the CHIPS Act. that will bring in federal money to basically bolster the American microchip, all of technology industry in order to compete overseas. We had a chip shortage in the last year and a half, and that sort of woke up a lot of people in the United States of, hey, maybe all of these really important computer chips and things that we manufacture, that we rely on for our technology, should not solely come from overseas, Taiwan, China, all these places. And so companies like Micron and HP are trying desperately to get Congress to pass this CHIPS Act to provide these incentives for them to expand American manufacturing and bring some of that production overseas. But Congress so far has not acted. The bill has passed both the House and the Senate, but in order for it to go to the president, both versions need to agree, and they don't agree right now, and things have been stalled. So right now, Micron CEO Sanjay Mehrotra joined some other CEOs, a group of 122 other CEOs and leaders, to write a letter from the Semiconductor Industry Association telling Congress, hey, you need to pass this. And if this CHIPS Act goes through, then that could pave the way for Idaho to use its own money that they passed for incentives in this last 2022 session. But those Idaho incentives are tied up in this CHIPS Act. So it's all sort of hanging in the balance there.
So if it all passed and everything came out rosy, would we see a Micron expansion? Do we know?
We don't know 100% for sure. Officials have been extremely reticent to talk. But, you know, publisher Don Day and myself have had several conversations with people that are privy to these conversations and said that, you know, an expansion is a very likely possibility. And, you know, whenever we asked Micron about it, they gave a pretty, I expected them to not comment, but they responded basically saying that they're exploring all these different places to put a fabrication plant. And the reason that this has an impact is that this would bring a lot of jobs to the Treasure Valley, and not just, you know, jobs that pay minimum wage or $10 an hour, $12 an hour. These would be highly paid, highly specialized manufacturing jobs. And, you know, economic studies have found that for every job at Micron in our economy, it powers seven other jobs. Wow. I think that's the figure, because people have, if you make $150,000 a year, $100,000 a year, you have money to go out to dinner more often. You have money to hire a cleaning lady for your house that maybe you wouldn't otherwise hire, and so on and so forth. And so it would provide a pretty large economic boost at a time when a lot of Idahoans, we have a lot of jobs, but a lot of Idahoans are looking for higher paying jobs in that manufacturing sector.
Wow. Betsy, before we get to some sparks over a proposed constitutional amendment, Margaret, we want to continue this story that we talked about with you just a little while ago about Eagle Wine and Dude DeWalt Cellars. They got their green light to expand some of what they do. Is that right?
That's correct. So, you know, I've talked about this a lot on the show. The last several months, there has been a huge kick up of several conflicts over wineries looking to grow in the foothills of Eagle. Longtime rural Eagle residents are frustrated. They feel like these wineries are impacting their rural way of life, the noise, they're worried about drunk driving, and they're basically making the argument, these are residential areas, this is not a business area. And we've seen these wineries, some of them small, like 3100 Cellars that I wrote about quite a lot, trying to open a small tasting room, and they got approved, but they had strict caps on how many people they could bring into their tasting room, limits on people, noise, operations, all kinds of stuff. But this past week, the Ada County Commissioners made a final decision on the expansion of a larger winery called Dude DeWalt Cellars, which is on Highway 16, much larger than 3100 Cellars. They estimate attendance of 200 people per day that come to their winery. It's up on a hill overlooking these stunning vistas, but next door neighbors are not pleased. One gentleman who attended, he provided several videos of the noise from the winery he could hear from his deck, and neighbors were arguing against it. And so the commissioners ultimately decided to say, yes, we're going to allow Dude DeWalt Cellars to become an event center, which means they can now host big events like weddings, up to 250 guests at a time, but only if they provide some extra screening and they update the entrance to the winery from the highway. It's a very narrow entrance just right off the side of the road. And and they also said they had to close early on Mondays and Tuesdays to compensate. And I can imagine that maybe the winery is happy to get their event center designation, but they also might be chafing a little bit about some of these extra requirements. I don't know that for sure, but it stands to reason if you want to expand a business and the government's going to constrict that a little bit, they might be frustrated. And I don't think the neighbors are happy. They really are not pleased with this business and how fast it's grown and the disruptions. And so we're just going to continue to see that as the area of Eagle continues to grow and the wine industry continues to want to expand.
Yeah, I'm thinking this is not the end of the wine story for you.
The wine story is going to continue on, I'm sure.
Okay, Betsy, what happened Tuesday at Idaho's Legislative Council? If I'm reading it right, it sounds like there were some sparks over the proposed constitutional amendment that's going to come up over calling special sessions of the legislature. Fill us in.
That's right. So in 2021, the legislature approved a constitutional amendment that will go on this November's ballot to allow the legislature to call itself into special session, whereas right now, the only way under the Idaho Constitution for there to be a special session of the legislature is for the governor to call it and to specify the topics that will be addressed. And that has been the case since statehood. Well, the legislature wants to be able to call itself into session on any topic it chooses whenever 60% of each house want to do that. And so that amendment passed the legislature in 2021, goes before voters in November. And as part of the process of placing a constitutional amendment on the ballot, the Legislative Council was charged with approving the pro and con arguments that will appear in an official state voters pamphlet. Now, this amendment, although it got 2/3, which was required, it was just barely, at least in the Senate, and it had no support from minority Democrats, and there were a smattering of Republicans in both houses who opposed it. There is quite a bit of controversy about whether the legislature should be able to call itself into special session whenever it wants. And the amendment doesn't include any limit on the length of those special sessions or on the frequency of them. So when it came time to take a look at the pro and con arguments, there was a public input process, and the legislative staff had put together a draft, and the Legislative Council got a chance to debate those. And predictably, the Democrats thought that the arguments against weren't strong enough, and the majority Republicans thought that the arguments in favor weren't strong enough, to the point that they could not agree on the arguments in their meeting, and they had to meet again this week to go over those again. And so they met again on Tuesday, and there were new proposals from both sides, and the Republicans wanted to add a sentence in there about COVID and about how the legislature really wanted to convene about COVID, but the governor wouldn't do it and delayed them. And the Democrats wanted to add a sentence about becoming a full-time legislature and how this could open the door to legislators being here year-round and losing touch with their districts and so on. Well, neither side liked the other's proposal. However, the Republicans have the majority. The Democrats had also proposed some grammatical changes to kind of, and this was at the suggestion of Senator Melissa Wintrow, to kind of make the arguments more even-handed, have them grammatically the same so that the argument for starts, this amendment is needed because, the argument against would start, this amendment is not needed because, you know, just kind of even them out a bit. And there were some proposals to, well, let's take out the controversial language and just kind of, you know, go with what we all agree on. Well, no, that's not what passed. The Republican version passed. They didn't do any of the grammatical changes. And the meeting ended with Senator Chuck Winder kind of firing off a riposte against the Democrats, saying, you guys are asking the governor to call a special session right now for a gas tax holiday. Isn't that a great argument for why we should be able to call ourselves into special session? And how ironic that you're opposing this. And then as soon as everybody wanted to respond to that, he said, meeting adjourned. So that's how we got our arguments. And this will all be up to the voters in November. And it's a simple majority for the voters to approve a constitutional amendment. If a majority of voters says, yes, we want this legislature to be able to call itself back into session whenever it wants, as many times as it wants, for as long as it wants, as long as 60% of the members of each house agree, then it will amend the Idaho Constitution. That will be the case. If the voters say, no, we don't like that idea, then our Constitution will not change and we'll stick with what we have now.
Okay. Margaret, I remember the last couple times you've been on, I gave you something like 2 minutes to cover something. And so I'm not going to do that again. I'll give you about a minute 45. Tell us about electric bikes coming to Boise, but self-driving scooters are not.
That is true. So really quick, we were supposed to have a pilot of these remote controlled scooters that could drive themselves to you on three wheels. So you could drive somewhere and then they could park themselves. And the idea behind this was that the scooters would not be littering the streets and blocking all sorts of ramps and ADA access. And this was going to come to Boise. It had the green light from the city council, but then Spin, the company that was going to do the test, was purchased by a Berlin-based company, and they decided that they're not interested in these self-driving scooters. So we won't have that anymore, but we will have a small trial funded by the Urban Renewal District of electric bicycles that will be around, parked at the Boise Green Bike Hubs, that you can ride around the city and activate using an app. And so depending on how that trial goes and if they can earn some sponsors, we might see a return to the bike share, but this time they will be electric.
Oh, you are awesome, Margaret. I want to send out my thanks to the reporter roundtable today, Betsy Russell, the Boise Bureau Chief at the Idaho Press, and the voice of the Eye on Boise blog, which you should read every day, and Margaret Carmel, Senior Reporter with BoiseDev.com. And our thanks to Heath Drusen with Boise State Public Radio News for joining us earlier in the show. You can find his podcast, Extremely American, on our website, BoiseStatePublicRadio.org. Betsy and Margaret, thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks for having us.
I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. You're listening to Idaho Matters.